Blog Talk Radio.
You know, people have no idea what you went through to get to where you are. So many times it seemed like it was over. But God, Isaac Carey, tell them about it.
Every time I think that I'm all by myself. Yeah. I just look up in the sky, and that's where I find my help.
Somebody needs to hear this right here.
You might think that you got it all worked out.
Yep.
All right, shalom, shalom, everyone. How is everybody doing today? If you can hear me, I just need one person to push one. Can you hear me? I don't see nobody pushing one yet. Somebody, all right, I got you. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Shalom, shalom. How is everybody doing this wonderful first day of the week? I'm still coughing, so bear with me. I might go on mute a few times. I just don't want to cough in your ear. I got some things I want you to listen to today. I ran across a clip from Martin Luther King. It was a very interesting interview that they did with him. And I want to know what you think about it. So I'm going to play this first before I open up the mics because I want everybody to kind of give it. And that's, it's just ironic how, you know, he was seeing things back then. And I want to just play it. I was listening to it this week. So the interview's already in session. So I didn't want to play it from the beginning, but he asked, the interviewer asked him a question. So I'm going to play it at this point so you guys can listen. Here we go.
Is there something hypocritical about the fact that the South existed and the North could point the finger? And then when the Civil Rights Acts were passed in the early 60s, you couldn't point the finger anymore?
Well, there was no doubt about the hypocrisy of large segments of the nation on the whole question of racial equality. I think the best example is that many of the senators from the North and the West and congressmen in general who voted for civil rights legislation in 64 and even 65 of the Voting Rights Bill refused last year to vote for civil rights legislation because it dealt with an issue applicable to the North, the whole housing question. And this, it seems to me, was the greatest expression of the hypocrisy of many of our citizens and many of the senators and congressmen of the North.
But isn't that part of the dilemma now? That people knew that Negroes were being denied what was guaranteed to them by the Constitution, by the fact that they were citizens of this country. Then when they were given those rights, do you feel the white community said, well, we've given them all that we have, now it's up to them?
Well, I think the dilemma is much deeper, and I think one during this period of transition has to be very honest with America. And honesty impels me to admit that America has broad racist elements still alive. Racism is still existing in American society in many areas of the society, North and South. And the other thing is that there has never been a single solid, determined commitment of large segments of white America on the whole question of racial equality. I think we have to see that vacillation has always existed, ambivalence has always existed, and this to me is the so-called white backlash. It's merely a new name for an old phenomenon. I see the white backlash as a continuation of the same ambivalence and vacillation of white America on the whole question of racial justice that has existed since the founding of our nation. I think the other thing that we must see at this time is that many of the people who supported us in Selma, in Birmingham, were really outraged about the extremist behavior toward Negroes. But they were not at that moment, and they are not now, committed to genuine equality for Negroes. It's much easier to integrate a lunch counter than it is to guarantee an annual income, for instance, to get rid of poverty for Negroes and all poor people. It's much easier to integrate a bus than it is to make genuine integration a reality and quality education a reality in our schools. It's much easier to integrate even a public park than it is to get rid of slums. And I think we are in a new era, a new phase of the struggle, where we have moved from a struggle for decency, which characterized our struggle for 10 or 12 years, to a struggle for genuine equality. And this is where we are getting the resistance, because there was never any intention to go this far. People were reacting to Bull Connor and to Jim Clark rather than acting in good faith for the realization of genuine equality.
Do you think white people in this country, and I'm talking about non-segregationists, people devoid or thinking they're devoid of racism, do you have any idea of what they want the Negro to be in America?
Well, it depends on the level that we are talking here, because I think you have to make a distinction between the people who are genuinely and absolutely committed in the white community on the question of racial equality. And I must confess that I think they're in a very small minority. I think the vast majority of white Americans will go but so far. It's a kind of installment plan for equality. And they are always looking for an excuse to go but so far.
Why are they looking for the excuse? What is it about the Negro? I mean, every other group that came as an immigrant somehow, not easily, but somehow got around it. Is it just the fact that Negroes are black?
That's a part of it. And growing, that grows out of something else. You can't thingify anything without depersonalizing that something. If you use something as a means to an end, at that moment you make it a thing and you depersonalize it. The fact is that the Negro was a slave in this country for 244 years. That act, that was a willful thing that was done. The Negro was brought here in chains, treated in very inhuman fashion. And this led to the thingification of the Negro. So he was not looked upon as a person. He was not looked upon as a human being with the same status and worth as other human beings. And the other thing is that human beings cannot continue to do wrong without eventually rationalizing that wrong. So slavery was justified morally, biologically, theoretically, scientifically, everything else. And it seems to me that white America must see that no other ethnic group has been a slave on American soil. That is one thing that other immigrant groups haven't had to face. The other thing is that the color became a stigma. American society made the Negro's color a stigma, and that can never be overlooked. So I think these things are absolutely necessary. The other thing is that America freed the slaves in 1863 through the Emancipation Proclamation of Abraham Lincoln, but gave the slaves no land or nothing in reality, and as a matter of fact, to get started on. At the same time, America was giving away millions of acres of land in the West and the Midwest, which meant that there was a willingness to give the white peasants from Europe an economic base, and yet it refused to give its black peasants from Africa, who came here involuntarily in chains and had worked free for 244 years, any kind of economic base. And so emancipation for the Negro was really freedom to hunger. It was freedom to the winds and rains of heaven. It was freedom without food to eat or land to cultivate, and therefore it was freedom and famine at the same time. And when white Americans tell the Negro to lift himself by his own bootstraps, they don't look over the legacy of slavery and segregation. I believe we ought to do all we can and seek to lift ourselves by our own bootstraps, but it's a cruel jest to say to a bootless man that he ought to lift himself by his own bootstraps. And many Negroes, by the thousands and millions, have been left bootless as a result of all of these years of oppression and as a result of a society that deliberately made his color a stigma and something worthless and degrading.
Apart from wanting to live better, which all of us want to do, to raise one's children in a better way, to be better, does the Negro in America know what he wants to be?
I'm convinced that almost every Negro in this country, other than those who have been so scarred by the system that they've become pathological in the process, and we all have to battle with pathology, and nobody really knows what it means to be a Negro unless one can really experience it. And I know we all have to battle with this constant drain of a feeling of nobodiness. But in spite of this, I think the vast majority of Negroes in this country know that they want to be people, they want to be men, they want equality, period. It just boils down to that. And we haven't been able to be people. We haven't been men because of all of the conditions that we've lived with and the syndrome of deprivation surrounding conditions, whether it's in housing, in the economic area, or in schools, or in the vicious credit practices that we face in the ghetto, and all of the problems of closed doors and constant defeats. But in spite of all this, I think we all know, basically, that we want to be men. We want to be persons judged not on the basis of the color of our skin, but on the basis of the content of our character.
All right, what to say about that? I just found that to be pretty interesting. I happened up on it this week, and I was like, wow. All right, let me open up some mics. I'm sorry about the cough. I'm trying to get over this thing. Hold on, let me open up some mics. Anybody want to push one and give a comment, please feel free to do so now. Let me start with 720. Area code 720, what do you think about that?
I think it's pretty amazing that we've been in this struggle for so long, and we're dealing with a nation that is unable to sympathize with those issues. And I think he pointed out some really important issues about it, particularly about the boots. It's that we're always told, well, just do like everyone else, just pull yourself up by your bootstraps, when in reality there weren't any boots. So very interesting. I've never heard that before. Thank you for that.
Oh, no problem. One moment. Let me open up this mic. Area code 757. What do you think about it? I kind of happened up on it, too, and I was like, wow. And it was an interview that they tucked away. 757, what do you think?
Okay. Sister Yaya, you know, I just think it's ironic because do they realize that if it wasn't for us, they wouldn't be in the position that they're in? I mean, is it that hard to see that? Or I just think they just don't want to see that.
I mean, are you asking a question? Well, I think they know. I think they know, you know, what we've done and what we have contributed to this nation. But again, knowing the punishment and the things that we've had to endure, you know, it's I think everybody turns a blinded eye because they said we've done enough. We've allowed them to have what we have, and we've done enough. So, you know, I think they know.
No, it's that's not. Mm-mm. I just think they refuse to believe. You know, they don't want to, and so it's just, you know, things have, it's just like it's always been with them. So that's unfortunate, but that's why we have the level of the playing field.
Yeah, hallelujah. Area code 540, your mic is open. What do you think? 540-904. Comment?
Sorry, they know very well our capabilities. They won't have anything. There wouldn't be a country without us. They know this. And so they're afraid, honestly, because when you think about, was it 1921, when they we built that Wall Street and other towns that they destroyed, if we were given a chance, an opportunity, not even a big one, but a small opportunity, we as a people, we are amazing. We will build the towns that they would stand there with their mouths wide open. How in the world did they do this without a lot of money? And they're afraid of that. They know who we are from the beginning. All the leaders in this world, they know who we are. So they have made a decision to keep their foot on our necks. And that's the reason why they would not give us reparations that easily. And that's why Yah himself said we will leave with great wealth, or great substance, because it's going to come from him. But what they fail to realize is the punishment that is coming for the things they have been consistently doing, because we're not free. We're not free.
No.
And we've not been given fairness. So the day is fast approaching. They'll get theirs, and they'll learn far too late.
All right, hold on. Area code 770, Brother Donia. Your mic is open. You're on the air.
Shalom, shalom, family. This is Adonia. I agree with everything that has been said. I just wanted to, you know, what's so amazing to me is that Martin Luther King laid it all out on the table. He didn't cut his words. He didn't use no big words that you can't understand, you know. And still, nothing has been done from that time to this time. I mean, it just amazes me how they could just put a blind ear, you understand, to what's being said, you understand? You know, so we can't expect nothing from these people. They're not going to hear it. They're not going to, you know, they're not going to repent. You know, of course you're going to find a few that has some moral fiber and they see it, but those are the people that we always get on our side that can't do nothing. You understand? We get them folks, you understand? When they went across the bridge, they had a number of them same folks with us, but they can't do nothing. They got beaten down too. You understand? So they're never going to see it. They never going to see it, man. Most of them, that was sitting with him at that table, or that one individual that's sitting up in that table, have no clue. You understand? Of being a white, of being a black man in America. You understand? And I can only speak for America. And I notice it goes on throughout all the places that where we're captive. But in America, it was started here in America. The slave trade started in America, you know, and then it went all over the world. You understand? And I say started here, but you know, the slavery portion of everything. You understand? Everybody looks to America. You understand? So if they make an effort to do something, you understand, then it moves on out to the other places. But America's not going to do a thing. You can forget that. You understand? That's why the Almighty gave them 400 years. The punishment is for us, you understand, to get it right this time, because the Almighty had told us, you understand, we've been punished for our disobedience. You understand? Mm-hmm. And so we have to get it right within the 400 years. You understand? It didn't say inside the 400 years, oh, it's going to be all right now. He didn't say that. He said that after that 400 years, they're going to be punished, those nations that held us captive. And after that, we were going to come out with great substance. You understand? It didn't say nothing about us being the punishment. I mean, even though the punishment, our punishment has been lifted, it doesn't say that we're going to be all right. You understand? Only time we're going to be all right is when we're out of here. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. All right, anybody else want to give a comment on it? If you heard it, please feel free to push one. I thought it was very interesting. Hold on, area code 912, your mic is open, you're on the air.
Yes, hold on. It's just amazing that he said that, you know, and he's like, you know, it's very hypocritical on them. But then again, you know, that's just a place in their heart. You know, they're not going to give up anything. They're not going to do right back. Most high is going to have to make them, you know, over and over again. They assume that they don't care nothing. They don't want to do right by us at all.
That is true. I think that's very true. You know, and the biggest thing is that the way he was talking from a black person's standpoint, He definitely wasn't awoke as to who we are. He wasn't, you know, and he was speaking from a person who has set his roots here, you know, and wanting things to be better. But knowing who we are, it's clear if he had a clue, he's not letting on, you know. So, you know, it's just, I just thought it was very interesting, you know, both the questions that were asked and the way they were answered. You know, I did. No, no. But do you think it's better now than it was then? And my question is, how would you gauge it if you think it's better now than it was then?
I'd like to try to answer that right now. They just changed it up, man. They took the chains off the legs and put it on the mind. They got us thinking that we free, you understand, to do what we want to do. This is what he said, you understand. We feel like we could do a little something, and we're not going to be able to do it, you understand. You know, and a sister had brought something else to mind. We built, what do they call it, Black Wall Street. And we there was another place that we built up. Guess what? They tore it all up, man. You understand? They killed 5,000 people or and put 5,000 people out of houses and all of that stuff, man. They're not going to do anything for us. You understand? It's a terrible situation that we in. But the Almighty is so powerful beyond compare. He's going to make everything right, and we're going to be happy. That's the major thing. Hallelujah.
And I think that the frustration comes in because we've been here for so long. I mean, because now we can buy houses, we can buy cars, we can go to college, we can get a job. You know, we have a little bit better circumstances, but the punishment is still the same. It's like I said, it's just packaged a little bit different because you're still on the bottom. But, you know, I think that they feel like, you know, well, we've given you all the opportunity to, like you said, pull yourselves up by your bootstraps, you know, and we have given you opportunities to be able to do that. So, you know, not to mention that we know for us that are conscious, it means something different.
Absolutely. Absolutely, you understand? You know, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, man. That's a slap in the face. After 240 years of us not having nothing, and still we here, and still struggled. You understand what I'm saying? And they built Black Wall Street, and I think there's other. I can't remember this other place. You understand? And somebody made a valid point, man. You understand? Regardless of our captivity, we still remain able to survive. You understand? So it's just a messed up situation. I mean, the reason why we can look at it, man, because we in it. We are in this here. You understand? So, and if we, you know, like if we, you know, once we get out of here and we look back on this, we can say, wow, we struggled. You understand? And we went through it, and we, you know, we survived. You understand? But when you in it, man, it breaks your heart in two to see what's going down. You understand? You know, and then see, like I said, man, they took the chains off the leg and they put it on the mind. Got us thinking that we all right now. You understand? And you mentioned it. We got houses. We go to school. You understand? We go to colleges, graduate from colleges. They ain't got no job for everybody to graduate from college. You can forget that. They got to start at McDonald's.
And see that's what I'm saying, Brother Adonia, because you know what? We get houses, but you miss some payments on that house. It's going right back to them. And
okay.
If you, when you graduate out of school, you won't necessarily be working in the field that you studied in. There's a lot of people that got advanced degrees, and they are working menial jobs. That means nothing. They control everything.
That is correct. And one other thing here, too, I want to say is we was doing a lot better when we had our own fields, our own job, when we were segregated. Once we integrated, we lost everything. We lost them houses that we had. We lost them farming lands, you understand? We wind up getting jobs, you understand, paying them taxes, you understand, and everything, you understand, and living in those apartment houses, you understand, where if you mess up with your rent, they kicking you to the curb. You know, so it's a conundrum that we're in. We're damned if we do and damned if we don't.
But we brought it on ourselves.
Oh yeah, we did that. We did that.
Hard pill to swallow. I told you when you come to that conclusion, and you hear the Negro that's not conscious speak from the point of view that he speaks from, and then we mm-hmm. know why we're sitting here and what we did. It makes me angry to know that we brought this on ourselves, because it didn't have to be this way. You know, it did
yeah.
not have to be this way. And we would never, let me say this, all of Noah's sons, and I'm going to say it again, all of Noah's sons have had an opportunity to rule the world except for us. We are the representative of Shem, and instead of giving us a chance to rule the world, we were put on probation. He
yeah.
gave us a land, and he gave us a monarchy, and he told us, do this, and you will prosper. He said, but if you don't do this, this is what
yep.
will happen to you. And that's why I wrote that play, A Nation
yes.
with Failed Probation, because we
yes.
were put on probation to rule our own and govern ourselves, and we failed probation. And that is exactly why we're sitting over here right now today.
And one other thing, sister, and I want to say that you might want to read that after a while, but which was a very good thing. But you know, see, the thing is that our forefathers messed up, and what really I think that the Almighty is upset with is that the law was in the land. It was something that we could follow. You know what I'm saying? He gave us the opportunity to that, but we were so and you made it very plain to me the other day when you told me, you understand, we screwed it up ourselves. We were evil, we were wicked ourselves. You understand? You know, and so yeah, I would appreciate it if you let everybody else poem or whatever it was, you
yeah.
understand, that you, it was very, very good. Very good, man. Everybody need to hear that.
And we did. We failed probation. He never gave us the world to rule. And that's what's getting ready to come next. He's going to give us the world to rule. And that's why he has to shift the ones of us that's not going to do right completely
that
out of the program, because we're finally going to get a chance to rule the world, because guess what? Ham's children have ruled the world. And now it's Japheth's children, which are the Gentiles, which are the Caucasian people. They are ruling the world right now. But Shem's children never got a chance to rule, because he chose us, the children of Israel, to represent Shem's children, and he put us on probation, and we failed probation. So now the part of the story that was left out is we're going to get our chance to rule the world just like everybody else has had an opportunity to do it. But everybody's not going to get it, because everybody's not going to line up and do what they're supposed to do. So we got to get prepared now to be able to follow instructions, do what we're supposed to do while we're still yet in this captivity, and get ready to move when he says move, because the next big phase of this is that he's getting our people prepared so that we have a chance to rule the world, because we've never done it. We've never done it. We ruled the land of Canaan, but we never ruled the world. We cleared off the land of Canaan, and we populated the land of Canaan, but you got to understand, the probationary period ended when Nebuchadnezzar came in and took it over. It's never been the same since.
Well, you know, I can agree with you up to one point. And I think it's righteousness that is got to be sown. You understand? That's what got
right?
to be sown. You understand? That's what got to be in everybody's ear. I think in Ezekiel you had mentioned something about the Egyptians will not be able to go back into their homeland for 42 years after we establish ourselves in our own homeland. You understand? And I think that's because righteousness. They can't go back into Egypt, you understand, unless it's going to be under righteousness. You understand? They're going to have to do a whole new thing. Remember now in Egypt, you understand, they was they were heathenistic and immoral, and they worshiped other gods. What sense would it make for them to go back into that land if they're going to do the same thing. It has to be right under righteousness. Hallelujah. That's just my opinion.
All right, anybody else? Everybody that's on the line that's listening, if you want to push one, please do so. Everybody else, your mic is open. I mean, how do you feel about that fact that we've never ruled the world? We have never had an opportunity to be a world-ruling people. We ruled the Canaan land, but we never ruled the world. And that's what's next. To give us an opportunity. Shem's lineage is next to rule the world. And that is the biggest issue that's going on now because nobody wants to give up the rule. Everybody said, no, this is the end of it all. And no, this is not the end of anything. This is the beginning for us. And it's going to be very difficult for a lot of people to accept that. They're not just going to scoot over and hand you the keys and say, oh, this is your house now. Okay, make sure you take care. They're not getting ready to do that. So, I mean, we have to understand how this thing plays out. Every one of Noah's sons, and he only had three. The first two, Ham and Japheth, those were the two sons that had the opportunity to be a world-ruling nation. But Shem's children, we didn't get that opportunity. We didn't. Not yet. And that's what's coming. You know, and when you hear black people speak from a perspective of being here, because it's bigger than us being here. And this just happens to be where we sit today. All praises to the Most High for giving us an opportunity to make things a little bit better. But knowing what we know now, we have a far richer history that's going to surpass this and move into a place where we will be able to like he said, take the shackles off your mind. Take it off and be able to move in a direction where I'm working on myself to make sure that I'm walking in righteousness to the best of my ability until we get ready to go. Because a lot of people say, well, you know, Yaina, we built up this 400 years, and we talked about this 400 years, and we built it, and we built it, and we built it, and we built it, and now it's over. It's like there's nothing else to do, and there's always things to do because we have to start helping those people that are conscious and those people that are becoming conscious how to live the culture that we have.
Yeah.
It's work to do. And then when we get our next assignment, we'll do our next assignment, but in the meantime, we have to stay busy until he calls us to do something else. Anybody else want to push one? I'm going to go back to it for a minute. We got about 5 more minutes left. I want you to hear the rest of it. Here we go.
You know that many young Negroes don't want anything that smacks the American white middle class. But do they want something that smacks of whatever is the black middle class? Or do they just not want bourgeois values, which, after all, the basis of this democracy?
Well, I think we have to see what they are saying. I would be the first to agree that integration does not mean giving up everything that has an Afro-American taint, so to speak, a background. I think there are certain unique things within any culture and certain cultural patterns that when you get to the process of amalgamation, can really lift the whole culture. And it seems to me that integration at its best is the opportunity to participate in the beauty of diversity. I think the other thing that we've got to see is that these young people are saying that there must be a revolution of values in our country. As Jimmy Baldwin said on one occasion, what advantage is there in being integrated into a burning house? And I feel that there is a need for a revolution of values in America because some of the values that presently exist are certainly out of line with the values and the idealistic structure that brought our nation into being. Unfortunately, we haven't been true to these ideals, and many of the values of so-called white middle-class society are values that need to be reviewed and reevaluated, and in a real sense, they need to be changed. So I think the young people in the Negro community who are raising these questions are raising some very profound questions about our total society. In other words, they are saying that there must be a restructuring of the architecture of our society where values are concerned. And with this, I would agree with. So in the quest for integration, I think we can offer our whole nation something, because there are three evils in our nation. It's not only racism, but economic exploitation of poverty would be one, and then militarism. And I think in a sense, and in a very real sense, these three are tied inextricably together, and we aren't going to get rid of one without getting rid of the other.
Well, you stood on the Lincoln Memorial that day in August, 63, and you said, "I had a dream." Did that dream envision that you could see a war in Asia preventing the federal government doing for the Negroes, preventing the society doing for the Negroes, that which you think had to be done?
No, I didn't envision that then. I must confess that that period was a great period of hope for me. And I'm sure for many others all across the nation, many of the Negroes who had about lost hope, saw a solid decade of progress in the South. And in 1954, which was, 64, 1963, 9 years after the Supreme Court's decision to be in the March on Washington, meant a great deal. It was a high moment, a great watershed moment. But I must confess that that dream that I had that day has at many points turned into a nightmare. Now, I'm not one to lose hope. I keep on hoping. I still have faith in the future. But I've had to analyze many things over the last few years, and I would say over the last few months. I've gone through a lot of soul searching and agonizing moments. And I've come to see that we have many more difficult days ahead, and some of the old optimism was a little superficial, and now it must be tempered with a solid realism. And I think the realistic fact is that we still have a long, long way to go, and that we are involved in a war on Asian soil, which, if not checked and stopped, can poison the very soul of our nation.
Dr. King, even if there had not been a war in Asia, would you still not have had this nightmare insofar as the Negro movement for equality then touched on two things that the white community holds sacred, their children and their property?
Oh, I have no doubt that we would have encountered great difficulties, great problems of resistance if the war had not been in existence, so that I'm not going to say that all of our problems will be solved if the war in Vietnam is ended. But I do say that the war makes it infinitely more difficult to deal with these problems. When a nation becomes obsessed with the guns of war, it loses its social perspective, and programs of social uplift suffer. This is just a fact of history, so that we do face many more difficulties as a result of the war. It's much more difficult to really arouse a conscience during a time of war. I noticed the other day, some weeks ago, a Negro was shot down in Chicago, and it was a clear case of police brutality. That was on page 30 of the paper, but on page 1 at the top, was 780 Viet Cong killed. That is something about a war like this that makes people insensitive. It dulls the conscience. It strengthens the forces of reaction, and it brings into being bitterness and hatred and violence, and it strengthened the military-industrial complex of our country, and it's made our job much more difficult, because I think we can go along with some programs if we didn't have this war on our hands that would cause people to adjust to new developments, just as they did in the South. They said they'd never ride the bus with us. Blood would flow in the streets. They wouldn't go to school and all of these things. But when people came to see that they had to do it because the law insisted, they finally adjusted. And I think white people all over this country will adjust once the nation makes it clear that in schools and housing, we've got to learn to live together as brothers. I think the biggest problem now is that we got our gains over the last 12 years at bargain rate, so to speak. It didn't cost the nation anything. In fact, it helped the economic side of the nation to integrate lunch counters and public accommodation. It didn't cost the nation anything to get the right to vote established. Now we are confronting issues that cannot be solved without costing the nation billions of dollars. Now, I think this is where we're getting our greatest resistance. They may put it on many other things, but we can't get rid of slums and poverty without it costing the nation something.
There you have it. Yes, yes. He said the dream has turned into a nightmare. Woo! He said it himself. Don't nobody else have to say it.
Yeah, I think that he realizes and that, you know, when he was making all of those assertions back there in those days, before this, that particular, you know, he thought that they would recognize, but they never going to recognize. They have no concept of the punishment of an enslaved people. Remember, you understand, it was about black folks at that particular time. But see, knowing what we know now, you understand, we know that we did it to ourselves. We understand that, you understand. He's not making this video or those assertions because he understands, you understand. He's dealing with how we are today, you understand, and if they change up and do, you know, and start giving us the freedoms that we expected to have, you understand, it would be different. But they're not going to do that. They haven't done it yet. In the time when he made that particular interview, you understand, ain't nothing changed. it's still the same. You understand? I mean, it was simple and plain. It was nothing hard for them to understand. But they not going to understand. They have a different ideology. You understand? Total difference. I relinquish the mic.
All right. Well, I wanted you to hear it from someone who's not awake to try to fight for something that just can't be. And that was his job, to make it a little bit easier on us and have the ability to be able to change some things. But we know that no real change is going to come until we're sent back home to do what we need to do. Nothing else. Nothing else
correct.
Changes. There's nothing else that's going to fix it other than us to go back home and do what we're supposed to do.
Yeah. So I think I might have said this a long time ago, is that we've had a lot of martyrs, you understand, and they were only in place. We had Marcus Garvey, you understand, and Frederick Douglass, and a number of other, including Martin Luther King, you understand. But none of that stuff, I mean, they was only put in place to sustain us, you understand, until the Almighty. See, it's written somewhere in the book, and I might be paraphrasing, but is that a house will never be established unless the Almighty is there. You understand? And so here we are now in these days and times, and things are starting to change because we starting to understand that we must come back to Yah. We got to come back and start doing the laws, statutes, ordinances, and commandments that the Almighty has set aside for us. And if we don't, man, you understand, we're putting a nail in our own coffin. Hallelujah.
Somebody, yeah, I think it's beautiful. I think it's all beautiful. I think the story is beautiful. I think that the suffering was necessary because the Most High said we was going to suffer. The martyrs that we had, They stepped up to the plate when it came time for them to step up. They did what they needed to do so that he could be a little sanctuary for us. And now it's time to get prepared so that we can move to the next level. And that's what we're doing. We're getting prepared to move to the next level. And many people are going to fall by the wayside. They are.
Absolutely.
But we got to be able to stand fast and hold and stand still. You know, because we'll never come together on one accord and do what we need to do. I don't think that'll ever happen as long as we're here. I believe that once we get to where we're going, that's when the understanding is going to come. I think we'll lead together, but everybody believing the same thing and being there. I don't think that's never been in the history of us as a nation. Even when we was out in the wilderness at Mount Sinai, there was still an issue with people thinking that they were supposed to be in charge. They didn't want to follow Moshe. They made the golden calf. There's always been friction there. But if we could just get the people to understand that when it comes time to move, let's move. You know what I'm saying? But as far as trying to make everybody be on one accord and think the same way and do the same thing, that's not our job. The Most High never told us to do that. He never told us to do that. What he told us to do is gather ourselves. That's it. And I think the problem comes in that is we want, yes, ma'am.
I was just, don't you think that the Most High wants his people to follow the law, statutes, and commandments so that we can understand that we need to be obedient to his will before he takes us wherever it is we need to go?
No, I think this. Yes, we're supposed to follow his law, statutes, and commandments. But this is so many facets to that. There are so many different beliefs on that alone. Some people don't believe you're supposed to wear tassels. Some people believe you're supposed to wear tassels. Some people believe you ain't supposed to wear pants. Some people believe women, it ain't nothing wrong with women wearing pants. Some people believe, I mean, it's just so many different things. Some people believe that the Sabbath is from sundown on Friday to sundown on Saturday. Some people believe they hold the Sabbath from sunup to sundown. It's so many different variables that there's no way we're going to get on one accord. He didn't tell us to do that. He said, gather yourselves together, O nation not desired, so that when the time comes for us to move, we move. It's his job to settle all the questions and the issues. Man is not going to be able to do that. Now, whatever you think you're supposed to do, yes, do it. Do it to the best of your ability, and the Most High will straighten it out when it happens. But to waste some more time arguing with each other, I think it's a waste of time. I really do. We got to start getting ready to move. And some people are not coming anyway. They're not going to come anyway, so it ain't going to make no difference. But the ones that are putting forth an effort, because everybody's putting forth an effort. And why do I say that? Because there's a lot of groups out there now that are watching very closely the things that we do. And they're making comments about the fact that we wear tassels on the four corners of our clothes. And you all don't know what the covenant is. It doesn't matter what you think we know. We're doing this to the best of our ability and following God to the best of our ability. So if you've got time to take your eyes off of what you're doing and look at what we're doing, there's an issue somewhere. You do what you need to do and let us all go where we're going, because I guarantee you, Yah's going to straighten it all out when we get there.
Right. Yeah. But he's looking for an obedient people. And that's what got us in this predicament to begin with, is that we were not obedient to the Most High. And here we've been in this captivity for so long, and still a great deal of us are rebellious to everything that seems that's in the laws, and not even willing to look at the laws, or not even willing to get out of Christianity and say goodbye to all of this nonsense that we've learned through the ages. So I just think that the Most High is looking for a people who will be obedient to him before he takes us to the next phase.
Well, when it comes to Christianity, since they're not woke, there's nothing you can do. It's like a dead man. It's like a man walking in his sleep. They're not woke. The Most High closed their eyes. And just like he woke you up, when the time comes, he'll wake them up. But they're not woke. There's nothing you will be able to do to wake them up. I was around Christians all weekend this weekend. This lady walked up to me. She said, "What church are you at now?" I said, "None." I said, "I don't go to church anymore. I'm an Israelite." She said, "Oh, that's why I left it." I ain't pushed the issue. I mean, there's no need to push the issue. I answered her question. I left it that way. One of my cousins said, "What made you change?" I want to know what made you change. And before I got a chance to answer that, she left. She had to run an errand. So, I mean, you know, when the situation presents itself, I will answer any questions that they have. But y'all have to open their eyes just like, because mine wasn't open at one point. But for the people who are conscious right now, our job is to do the best we can, gather ourselves, and be ready to move when the time comes. Because he's going to wake them up when they, hopefully, before we leave, he will.
Right. Hallelujah.
But, you know, there's nothing we can do to make that. I have a whole family. There's full of bishops and pastors and evangelists and teachers that right now that are in Christianity, a whole family full of them. Believe me when I tell you, on three, four sides of my family, on my grandmother's side, on my grandfather's side, on my father's side, and on my mother's side, the pastors and preachers, teachers and evangelists. I stopped wasting my energy and doing what I need to do and do what y'all told me to do. Now, if a situation come up and I have to tell them, I tell them, and I keep it moving. I don't go through no changes. It makes for a better life. I pray for them, and I trust y'all, because the same way he opened up my eyes, when the time comes, he'll open up there. That's all you can do. That's all you can do. Because you'll exhaust yourself trying to do something that's impossible to do. Because they're sleepwalking. I mean, they really are sleepwalking. They are. They really are. And there's nothing you can do about it. You know, I had to sit while a Gentile was praying on Friday. And I just sat there like, I wasn't being rude. I wasn't being angry. I didn't make any facial expressions because I've learned something. I will respect whoever you are, where you are. It's not my job to do anything else. You know? And now if the situation presents itself and you ask me, then I'm going to tell you the truth. But I didn't disrupt anything. I let it do the way it does because I was around Christians. And they think they're right. You know? And sometimes the best testimony is the silent testimony. It is.
Yeah, that's true.
No? You get more done. You know, you just let them do what you know. If you ask me, I'll tell you. But if you don't ask me, I'm it just is what it is. You know, you're better off. You it'll be a lot less hectic if you learn how to let people be who they are. Because they're watching you, I guarantee you. I stood up in a podium the other day, tassels on, hair covered up, the whole 9 yards representing. But I did what I believe I was supposed to do at that moment. And all of them knew me from church. So, you know, they was whispering, "What's wrong? What she got on? What's going on?" I gave honor to God and the whole 9 yards. But I didn't push the issue. Because it's not for me to do that, because he has to open up their eyes.
You're right about that. You're right.
You know, I just have learned some things. Some things are better off left alone, you know. You got to let people be what they be. And they got their digs in, you know, every now and then. Somebody would say something. My cousin told me, "Well, I pay my tithe, so that's what I do." I said, "Wonderful. If that works for you, that's wonderful." You keep giving them 10% of your income. And she's a doctor, so I know she's making money. You keep on giving them 10%. You know, they happy to see you coming. You know, but I didn't say that to her. I said it to myself. I do what you got to do. not to let them be where they are, and love them back to life. You know, once they wake them up, you know, you be there for whatever questions they may have, and you just keep them moving. Because they watching, I guarantee you they're watching you. They are. So, anybody else? No? No, it's so much to this. It's a beautiful thing to be awake. It's a beautiful thing to know who you are. And some people are like, okay, so you know you're Israelite. What difference does it make? It makes all the difference in the world because it changes the dynamic of the story. The story changes. You have to understand that the whole story changes. Because from a Gentile perspective, which black people can't be Gentiles because Gentiles are the children of Japheth, from a Gentile perspective, the story ends with them. But when you know you're a Hebrew Israelite, there's a whole other section to the story. Ain't nobody telling you. And it changes the dynamic of everything. You know, I gave them business cards to the radio show. I did. I passed them out. You know, I did what I was supposed to do. I passed those out. You know, but I didn't push the issue. And some of them might throw them in the garbage. I don't know. You know, but it is what it is. You know, all praises. Because when the time comes for us to leave, Diana's going to be on that boat. You know? And my mom, it's so good to know the truth. You know, to sit through all that and know the truth, it is such a blessing. I said, Sure is. Yeah. But this is the world we live in. We have to work with them every day. When you start functioning in that capacity, you live life so much easier. It becomes so easy to live life. You know, like he said, I believe the dream turned into a nightmare because you didn't get the outcome you thought you were going to get. You thought you were going to change your story. Nobody gets to change the story, but you played your part because the part that he played, they eased up off of a son. You know what I'm saying? And y'all was able to be a small sanctuary to us and allow life to get a whole lot better than it was when we was in the cotton fields and getting beat up with straps. It changed a little bit. He was a little sanctuary. But the outcome that you expected, you'll never get because this was supposed to be punishment. Look. So, and you know, when you know that, when you know better, you do better. It's simple. And it's only going to be a remnant. It's going to be a few that go first. It's going to be a large remnant, but it's going to be a remnant that's going to go first. But nevertheless, Yah is still good. He's in control. He wrote the story, and this is the way the story goes. And some of my family members that were Rastafarian that knew the truth before I did was there, and they didn't say anything. They just smiled because they see I'm waking up. They're like, oh, so you woke, you know? It's a beautiful thing. I wouldn't trade my life for nothing in the world right now. Even though I'm still sitting in this country, it's a blessing to know who I belong to.
Hallelujah.
And I'm special. And that he loves me. And he loved me enough to chastise my ancestors. And he didn't make a total end of us completely. And that love surpasses all understanding. But that he made us a promise that he was going to come and get us. He made us that promise. You know. A blessing. So when they in there singing, you know, when we all get to heaven, what a day of rejoicing it will be. When we all see Jesus, so we had to listen to that. We will sing and shout for victory. I just look. I said, yeah, well. You know, let me know how that work out. That's what I want to say. I didn't say nothing on this. I promise you I did. I wanted to. I did. I really did. I wanted to. But I didn't say nothing because I love my family. I love my family dearly. You know, I love my family. You know, and I really want them all to come into the knowledge of the truth. I do. But yeah, I have to let y'all be God and let him do what he did. Because somebody prayed for me. You know? And we might be the next Martin Luther King. The Most High may use us in the capacity to be the next Martin Luther King and be able to take us to the next level. Because when you can start to wake up, it begins to make sense. You don't know how many people that was in the presence yesterday that may be on the verge of wanting to do something different. You just don't know. You know? Anybody else have a comment, question, concern, issue? Well, now, y'all ain't usually this quiet now. Brother Urash?
No, you just, you know, I'm sitting here thinking about all of what you're saying. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It's a blessing just to know who we are and know that he didn't make it into it. I'm sitting here just thinking about that, and that is so true.
Because when we keep that law, we're living right, we're eating right, we're doing all the things we're supposed to do according to the law of God, and that's all he asked us to do. That's it. No more. Now we made it to that.
Mm-hmm.
So we go to work every day, we work among them. Some of them we know human, some of them is questionable. But guess what? He's still with us. And we survive today.
Yeah.
And to try to
and
change
we are
us,
still
you know,
here.
We're still here. That's right.
We're still here. So that in itself lets us know that we're under the Most High's protection right there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know how long that system's been going on? You know how well-oiled that system is? You know, the whole Christian system, it's been going on a long time. No? And it's going to continue to roll until he says different. So I just thank God. I really do. I thank you for this. I thank you for the radio show, the teaching, all of you. You know, and to be able to say, I know who I am and who I am today. You know, and that's the power of identity crisis and identity theft. When he restores that back to you, there's nothing anybody can tell you different. Lady was like, somebody needs to be saved. She said, baptized in Jesus' name and filled up with the tongue talking the Holy Ghost. I just looked. I didn't say nothing. That's where they at. Can't say nothing. I was there once. Speaking in tongues is the spirit of God give utterance. And it's Simon. And she went into her little tongue speaking spell. He could have, no. I didn't say a word. I didn't say no. Because I learned how to respect people where they are. That works for you. That works for me. When you ask me a question and you tell me and you want to know something, I'll let you know. That's how I feel about that situation. There's nothing else you can do about it because they really don't want to hear it. At the end of the day, they don't want to hear it right now. They can't hear it. It's like talking to a brick wall and saying, brick wall, I'm trying to talk to you and I need you to open up so that you can hear the words that's coming out of my mouth. And the words keep hitting up against the brick wall. And then you get to yelling, brick wall, do you hear me talking to you? And every time your words come out your mouth, they slam up against that brick wall. Do you keep on screaming at the brick wall?
No.
No. That's ludicrous. Hold on, let me open up the mic. Area code 972, your mic is open. You're on the air.
Hello. I have two things. For me, and this may just be for me, I've I feel that being an Israelite is wonderful, and it is. But part of what has happened with me is that I have become comfortable, and so I actually have kind of lost some of my fervency, and that's the thing that I have that's been kind of the thing that I have been trying to really work on, is to get the fervency that I had before I knew I was an Israelite, because it was like, I was thinking, oh, I need to connect with you. I need to know who you are. But when I found out who I was, like, I know who I am. I can relax now. But I actually have felt a call, at least within myself, to try and renew that fervency, to really go beyond the laws, the statutes, and the commandments. Because to me, they're relatively easy. I mean, it's easy, and it makes life simple, as you've said. But I also want that personal, fervent connection where I really hear. And I think it may be a function of the time. Maybe it's just time for us really to start saying it's time for us to, at least for me, connect with him in that way again, and not just kind of like relax. So I've had a period of relaxation, but I have actually felt the call to really try and develop that closeness. I mean, that the real, it goes beyond just the law, statutes, and commandments, to really do that relationship type of thing, where when I thought it was just me against the world, instead of me with a whole nation of people behind me. That really has been a comfort, but to a certain extent it's allowed me to relax in a way that I thought, you know, I really need to move back to that. And so I don't know if anyone else is feeling that, but for me, I'm thinking that that is really something that's very important at this point in time for me. And that's what I've been dealing with for the last week or so, or a couple of weeks.
Do you think that it is, you feel like that you're not as active as you should be? And you know what, the way I gauge that is, if I would have put you in charge of the class on Saturday or on Thursday, and we had questions for you, would you be able to biblically answer those questions?
I think some of them, at least, because I've been studying, but I haven't been studying in the way that I could have or should have probably have been studying. I haven't been studying to try and be a teacher of what it is that I've learned. It's like I've studied to know, just for my own personal growth and comfort, but it wasn't like in preparation or for battle. And for me, it's almost like I need to become, you know, like you say, people are asleep in the church. It's almost I to a certain extent, I had a certain amount of slumber going as an Israelite, and it's like, it's time for me to wake up, because it's time to get ready to battle. It's time for me to really, when the rubber hits the road, to really be able to hear and take the direction and do what it is that I need to do above and beyond, and knowing just the law, statutes, and commandments. That is great, because that gives me the way to make sure that I'm leading a moral, clean, upright life. And so I don't have anything that's blocking that connection. But then I need to be more fervent in terms of trying to pray, trying to set aside time. And these are the things that I've just been not as fervent as or committed as I should have been, I think, because, like I said, I just felt very comfortable. I'm thinking, I know who I am. I know whose I am. I know the direction in which I'm going, and I feel comfortable in doing that. And so for me, that has been like the thing that, like I said, it's just a personal thing. But I also think sometimes it precedes being able to hear. So I want to keep that in mind, for at least for myself, that should something happen, I want to be in the position where I've already done the preparation needed to not have to search, that I already have that connection where I will hear clearly and quickly what it is that I need to hear. And so I just thought about
very good.
I thought about
that's very good what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I think that's very good what you just said, because I went through that same thing. I went through when I was in church in Christianity, I would get up every morning at 5 o'clock in the morning and go into prayer. I would get on my knees every morning at 5 o'clock. I would go into prayer. I would speak in tongues. I would have my private time with God. I did that every morning at 5 o'clock in the morning. But when I came over here, it was more important for me to know who it was I was dealing with than to just have a prayer and pray to the entity that I was praying to in Christianity, because I needed to know who he was. So I think mm-hmm. that you do go through that part where you have to get the teaching, but once you get the teaching, you have to incorporate that prayer life back into it once you know who it is that you're dealing with. You know what I'm saying?
Right, and I honest truth is that I haven't. You know, I've been very remiss in that. You know, I say my prayers kind of like, so I'm going through the day and doing those, but not the way that I used to when I said I need to have an answer or I need to make sure that I'm connected, because I just felt that immediacy, that real need, because I thought I was, it was just like me against the world. It's just you and me, and if I don't have you, I'm done. But now I'm thinking, okay, I've got the laws, the statutes, the commandments. I know I'm an Israelite. But then I thought, you know what? There's something that I feel lacking in me, and that's what I need. I want that immediacy, because there's a comfort in that for me, too, to know, boy, when I need it. I know that I can get it, but I don't want to have to go through that extra step of backing up and going back to where it was that I should have been before. And the thing that made me think about it was the 10 versions, the wise and the foolish, they all slumbered and slept. And I thought, I think I've been slumbering. I didn't really think I was slumbering, but when I was thinking about it and I was thinking about my fervency as compared to what it has been in times past, and think, I've been slumbering. I really want a clean heart, and more than that, I really want to wake up, because it's time. You know, I found a note that says, I need to act as if I'm preparing to leave, because that's an act of faith on my part. And that's what I literally wrote, something to that effect. And so in doing that, that means I do need to really step up my game in terms of, do I believe? And if so, I need to act as if I believe. I need to take this seriously as when I thought it was just, you know, any moment I was going to need to have to assess you.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I think that's excellent. There's nothing wrong with that, because you have to have a prayer life too. And you have to get that same commitment that you gave in Christianity over here. And that's why I didn't stop the 6 o'clock prayer in the morning. I didn't stop that because, you know, I asked everybody if they wanted to, and they said, no, we want to keep going. So, you know, as we do those things and you incorporate those things, continue to do that, you know, and to pray as many times as you can during the day if you feel led to do that. Excuse me. You know, so I think it's wonderful that you know, that because the Most High has to put that into your heart to draw you to him, because that's the next phase. We have to increase our prayer life. We have to still go into our prayer closet. We have to still get on our knees and give him that time, that me time that he requires. You know, and knowing who he is now today, we do those things. So I think that's an excellent thing to do.
Well, that's what I'm going to try and do more, because the honest truth is it was very sporadic, even with the prayers in the morning. So what I've been trying to do is get up. When I get up, I turn my computer on, and I just have it audibly read to me, or I'll have other scriptures audibly read to me, or I read something, or I listen to something that is strengthening and that really sets my mind, as opposed to just rolling out and, oops, running late, here I go, and I'm off, right?
Right. So. And that's discipline. That's spiritual discipline. And you still have to have spiritual discipline. You know, it's, like you said, it's good to keep the law, statutes, and the commandments. But in order to know his voice, you have to be able to spend time with him. And he's still, and now we know who we're spending time with, and we know what he's done and what he's prepared for. What a relationship to have. So I think that's wonderful. I really do.
Yeah.
I think that's wonderful. I'm glad you brought that up, because a lot of people may feel like, well, I'm just doing enough. No, it's not just enough. You still got to have that prayer life. You still have to have that one-on-one, that me time with him. That's important to have, because that's how he builds relationship with us. It's a full package. Now, that don't mean we're floating around, because we still live life. We still do the things that we do, and sometimes we mess up. You know, but that's what repentance is for. That's what grace is there for. But we still have to pray, and we still have to hear his voice, you know, and know the difference. So I think that's excellent, sister. Let me get your name right. I'm gonna get it right. Don't tell me. Yesantia.
Yeah, Yesantia.
Yesantia. Yes. I got it right. Now, don't forget, you guys, on tomorrow, we're going to meet at 6:30. I need to meet with you guys tomorrow at 6:30 so we can get all this stuff wrapped up so we can finish. I'm sorry for the delay. I was on the line last Monday at 6:30, and nobody came on. So we're going to meet tomorrow, Brother Jeremiah and Brother Yerushalayim. And, you know, we need to meet tomorrow at 6:30 so we can kind of put everything, finalize and get everything together. But I think it's great. I mean, I really do think that's great that we're at that point now, you know, because we really got to pray now so we know when to move, you know, because I don't want my destiny to be in the hands of anybody else. When he say it's time to go, I want to be ready to go and know that it's him talking. And that's my whole thing. And, you know, somebody asked me, if you could ask him for anything else in the whole world, what would you ask him for? And that was my prayer, the ability to know your voice when you talk.
It's a lovely thing.
Yeah, because the other stuff is irrelevant. It is. I think the icicle lady done gave me a cold. I don't know what's going on over here, but, you know, all praises to the Most High. I'm just so glad that we have each other to pull strength off of, and that we have each other to help each other get through things. And, you know what I'm saying? And to be able to say, maybe we need to look at it like that. Maybe it's time to do that. You know, maybe we need to start doing a little bit more prayer. You know, and if you're at work, go in the bathroom. You know, close the stall, you know, and do what you got to do. You know, if you feel like you need to do that, sometimes you got to do that. You know. Stay focused, because this is a critical time. Anybody else? I had somebody else that pushed one, and they went away, so I don't know where they were. I think it was a 904 number. I don't know. I'm not sure. But it's just beautiful. Like I said, it's beautiful to know who you are today and to know whose you are and to be living this thing and giving time to get it right. So this is the time to perfect it. And sometimes it ain't always hoopla and something going on. This is the time when we get it right and we perfect it. You know, and move, because if we're going to be priests to the other nations and we're going to be kings and priests, we got to know what to do. We really do. All praise to the Most High God.
I want to ask one other thing. I hope there are people out there who are songwriters, because I am having, you know, music. I've been trying to find that inspirational music. And, you know, I actually pulled like Wild Gospel for 2019, and it was like going to a club. I said, you know, if I want to party, I just go to a
club. I know. I already know.
I mean, actually, because I was listening to it just like a couple of days ago. It was just like flat out going to a club. They say, where are my dancers in here? I'm thinking, you know, I don't mind dancing, but it's what I'm dancing to.
Right, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
If I'm going to club, let me club. So I really want the inspirational music. And I do. I take a lot of times, I just create my own words to the music as it is. But I know that there are probably a lot of songwriters out there that are creative people. And that is something that is really, 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 that I want. I mean, I don't know. Other people want it, but I certainly want it. So I'm hoping that people will create
and music other than rap. You know, it's more, I don't mind the rap music. I don't mind the Hebrew Israelite rap music. But give us something else other than rap music. You know,
worship Yah, where we're really talking about how we love him and we worship him and we look for him and we long for him. And, you know, I mean, something that just really expresses what's in me, so that when I can yell it and I can hum it and I can or whatever I want to do to it, you know.
Right.
So that's what I'm looking for. I'm trying to create it for myself.
It's out there. We just have to start looking together. But it's definitely out there, because you do want to listen to something else besides secular music, rap, Hebrew, Israelite rap music. It's like, no, there's more to it than that. There they go. Area code 904. Your mic is open. You're on the air. 904. Uh-oh. Maybe they put their phone back on mute. They got kids crying in the background. But, you know, it's there. That is, you know, the ability to be able to do it is there. We'll find it because it's out there. And sometimes I have to have it too. And I search around until I find it, you know, and it really takes you there. Because we're different, and our music should be different. I agree with you 100%. I do. I think it's great. Okay, so guess what? It's 5 o'clock. We got 5 more minutes. I want to give everybody an opportunity. Does anybody else have anything else they'd like to say? Brother Yerushalam, if tomorrow, if you have the time, at around 6:30, if you can, if you can meet with us, that would be great, because we got to get the men's class going. I really want to get that started like yesterday. I'm working on the women's stuff. We're getting a logo for the women's stuff, but we're going to set a date and get those dates going so we can get started and move to the next level with that, because I got to get everybody ready so we can start advertising these classes. Is that okay with you tomorrow?
Yes, ma'am. I'll be there at 6:30.
Wonderful. Wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. So once we get everything solidified with him, he's going to have a meeting with all the brothers, and he's going to set up a meeting for you guys to come together and start your first class, and we're going to have a date and everything and a phone number for you to call into, and we're going to get this stuff going, because we've been talking about it long enough, and it's time to get going, because once you get those things going, you'll find out how much you really are needed in the secular world, because people are hurting, and they just want somebody to talk to. And, you know, we got to do something besides social media to give them another outlet so we can do something positive. Anybody else? All right, well, guess what? If we don't have anything else, the females are coming together. I have a whole program that I wrote, and I'm going to get with Brother Yerushalam so we can sit down. I want to be able to share that with you as well, especially for the young people. And then, oh, I see you, 817. Hold on, I'll get you. Let me get you in here. Area code 817, your mic is open, and you are on the air. Okay. 817-313. Maybe they didn't mean to push one. I'm sorry. We have so many things we have to get done and get ready for our young people. I have some young people of you out there. We want to give you a date for the radio show. So like she said, you can platform your music. You know, we got young people that want to do poems over the air and all kind of stuff. So we got to get all this stuff together so that they can start sharing with us the things that they have and their talents with them, and get that all together, because eventually I would like to be able to have a call for young people to be able to have the issues that they want to deal with and have one of the adults facilitate that so that they can talk about the things that they need to talk about. So we're going to get all this done virtually and be able to provide assistance to our nation and the people that need us to be there to help them to get through this journey. All right, is there anything else before we dismiss for class? I mean, from the show, I have enjoyed the show today. I thank you so much for being continued listeners and diligent with the Nation of Yehuda, because we need all the help we can get. Anything else from anybody else? Nothing? All right, everybody, enjoy the rest of your Sunday and the first day of the week, and we will see you out tomorrow. Shalom, shalom, and have a wonderful rest of your evening. Good night, everybody.
Shalom, shalom. Good night.
Shalom.